You're just in time for the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff, the radio outreach of the Christian Research Institute. Our purpose here at CRI is to equip Christians to pursue sound doctrine, to discern truth and error, and to become faithful disciples of Christ, because life and truth matter. This is a live program, and we invite your calls. So dial toll-free 888-ASK-HANK. Numerically, that's 888-275-4265. Now, here's the president of the Christian Research Institute, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy. Again, the number to dial, 888-ASK-HANK, numerically, 888-275-4265. And as always, our contact information on the web, equip.org, via the mail. It's Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. And our resource consultants are standing by, 888-7000 and the letters CRI. I'm going to go right to the phone callers. Just one quick plug on Love Thy Body by Nancy Piercy, an absolute must read. I can't think of a more important book to read in this epoch of time than this particular book. I did a podcast with Nancy Piercy. You can hear that podcast on the web at equip.org, iTunes, wherever you consume your favorite podcasts. But this is a book that is absolutely crucial to read. Because if you contemplate the speed of our descent into cultural oblivion, it will not only make you dizzy, but it will cause you to want to make a difference, because this is no time to surrender. It's the time to mount a sustained counteroffensive. You know, until recently, we were engaged in a war against notions of truth and life. But now we're witnessing an all-out war on reality. You have a group of misguided zealots, and they are zealots, who have deified choice and are now substituting their deranged preferences for common sense. And these preferences have become enshrined as law. And so we've gone beyond troubling to what I would call terrifying. I mean, you think about some of these things. In Canada, it is now considered discriminatory for state entities, I'm thinking public schools now, to argue for male-female marriage or even parenting. In the province of Alberta, Canada, we now have guidelines instructing teachers and school administrators not to use terms like mother and father when talking to students. Instead, they must use only non-gendered terms. You know, guardians, parents, caregivers. While we're sleeping and we need to wake up, the toxic tentacles of transgenderism have reached dangerously into our laws. I think back to 2011, the Obama administrative's State Department, it announced that it was replacing mother and father on passport applications with parent one and parent two. Or in 2016, I think of how the New York City Human Rights Commission released a list of 31 terms of gender expression. You know, the terms like androgynous, genderqueer, non-binary, pangender, gender fluid. Well, you can think of a bunch more. Third sex, two-spirit, and the list goes on. And employers have to use these terms or face exorbitant fines. Fines up to $250,000. And I mean, you can add to the list. Trans activists have even protested the use of terms like man and woman because some males identify as women and vice versa. And believe it or not, the Midwives Alliance of North America changed their literature to delete the word mother and substitute pregnant individuals and birthing persons. It is now deemed transphobic to say breastfeeding. You have to say chest feeding because you have to be inclusive of trans men. The problem is that the insanity is apparently contagious as well. And my prayer, therefore, my fervent hope is that more people will come to their senses and let their voices be heard to halt the pandemic, which is now faced in Western civilization. Edmund Burke has well said, all that is necessary for the triumph of evil is good men to do nothing. And I think in light of today's increasingly mindless assaults on reality, we could paraphrase Burke to say, all that is necessary for insanity to triumph is for sane people to remain silent. We are witnessing the power of a very dangerous worldview, one that must be contested with all our resolve and withstood with all our might if we're to halt the momentum of what could well be called Western decivilization. We simply cannot call ourselves Christians and allow these evils to flourish unchecked. Again, all of that and more, why I am so fervently passionate about putting Love Thy Body by Nancy Piercy into your hands, the hardback book available for those who support the ministry. Again, check it out on the web. Equip.org, a lot of people calling in. The number to dial, 888-ASK-HANK. Let's go to Sheldon, listening in Alberta, Canada, on the web. Hi, Sheldon.
Hello. Thank you, Hank, for taking my call.
Pleasure.
Yes. I have a question for you, and I've been examining a lot of material that's been posted online regarding your conversion to the Orthodox Church and considering my own perspective as a Mennonite Christian. The Seventh Ecumenical Council included this particular wording. It says, "We preserve without innovations all the church traditions established for us, whether written or not written, one of which is icon painting as corresponding to what the Gospels preach and relate." My question for you is over the use of icons or religious art in the practice of worship. In what regard could that be considered making a graven image?
Well, it could never be considered making a graven image unless you actually worship the icon, because worship is to be given to God alone. I think about what happened in the book of Revelation, where John is receiving the revelation. He falls down to worship the angel who is giving him the revelation. And then John says that the angel says, "Do not do this. I'm a fellow servant with you and the prophets." Worship God. So we should never worship any being other than God. So the idea of icons is never an idea of worship. It's an idea of veneration. And as you have correctly noted, from the ecumenical councils, you see that these can be used in worship, but you can't worship the icons themselves. They can become a reference point for worship. And for that reason, icons have been used since the earliest days of the Christian church and were commonly found in places of Christian worship, if you go back through the centuries. Every church, in fact, I would argue, is filled with icons because every church is filled with people who bear the image and likeness of God, and therefore they are icons of Christ. But again, in Orthodoxy, you may never worship an icon. That would be a grave sin. But you can venerate the persons to whom the icons point. I'll give you a couple of examples. Mary and Jesus. We have icons of Mary and Jesus. I look at an icon of Mary, and I think I want to be like her. I want to be a meek and lonely servant of the Lord, even though Mary obviously was chosen to be the one person in all of human history out of the billions of people who ever lived on the planet. She was sovereignly selected by God to undo what the first woman did. You know, the first woman was deceived. The second woman conceived the Son of God and was the instrument through whom God brought his Son into the world in order to redeem the world. And what that means is that she is an icon or an image of Christ, so filled with Christ that she becomes the person I most want to emulate. So again, venerating the icon, I think, is a wonderful thing. And you have the gospel preached through these icons in a time where you don't even have Bibles. So they're storybooks that tell the story of creation. They tell the story of human history. I think about the iconograph. If you look at the dome of the Sistine Chapel, you have a narrative of the creative prowess of God so vivid that when you look at it, it seems like it almost springs to life. Looking at those icons of Christ is not to worship them. It is rather to venerate them and to see in them an exemplar or a pattern for my own life.
Okay. Kissing an image or praying in front of an image does not raise any red flags for you?
Well, again, you cannot, in Orthodoxy, you can never pray to a person. You can ask that person to pray for you. And in good Christian theology, we see the resurrection of having enormous implications in breaking down the paper tissue wall between this world and the next world. And so we ask people, saints, to pray for us, but we never pray to the saints themselves. So I think that to kiss an icon, to, you know, to have reverence, to venerate someone, as I just mentioned, like Mary, is a wonderful thing because Mary is an exemplar of what I want to be. So I look at the icon of Mary, and I don't worship Mary, but I look at Mary and think, oh, if I could have that meekness and humility, if I could be like Mary in that way, as she points to Messiah, so I want to point to Messiah.
I appreciate your explaining to that, me. You've been very open and honest.
Well, Sheldon, thank you for your call.
Yes.
And I appreciate you in particular bringing up the seven ecumenical councils. They mean a lot to me. Let's go back to the phone lines. Dr. Ron in Prescott, Arizona, listening on the web. Hi, Ron.
Good evening, Hank.
Good evening.
In John chapter 8, verse 44, the Lord's talking to the Pharisees, and he says, "You're of your father, the devil, who was a murderer from the beginning." Who did Satan murder?
Yeah, it's really interesting. He is the exemplar of evil. So you think in the context of John chapter 8, being a child of Abraham is based on sharing the attributes of Abraham. That's the point of the text. And in the same fashion, those who reject Christ share the same attributes as the devil, a hatred for truth. And therefore, the devil is called a liar. He was a liar. He was a deceiver from the beginning. And he is the one that becomes the tempter who causes us to follow in his train rather than being icons of Christ, to go back to our conversation just before this conversation, the last question. So he's the supreme exemplar of evil, and the world is patterned after his evil. It is Satan who leads the world astray. So that's the idea that is being communicated in this passage. Satan being the de facto ruler of all who willingly subject themselves to his masterful deceit. And I've said this many times, that Satan, as it were, sits on our shoulders. He whispers into our ear. The whisper cannot be heard with the physical ear, but it does penetrate the ear of the mind. So he tempts us, and we become those that carry out his horrible plan to devolve morality in the world, to mar the image of God, even through murder. So it is his incitement that we have to resist. So we're either children of Abraham, an exemplar of God, or we're of our father, the devil.
Okay, so it's not literal that he actually murdered a person. It's just symbolic of his evilness.
Yes, it is. And therefore, we don't want to be like Cain, who belonged to the evil one who murdered his brother, as John says in his first epistle. And we have to recognize that through Satan's temptation, Adam became mortal, as Paul explains in Romans chapter 5, and therefore Satan is really responsible for the murder of all humanity. And so, yeah, you wouldn't take it in a wooden literal sense, except it does end up being literal in that people follow the way of Satan and become murderers, just as Cain was a first murderer in terms of the biblical story, the biblical narrative, who took the life of his brother Abel. We're out of time for this segment of the broadcast, but we're going to be right back with more.
Turning the tables on the media boilerplate that portrays Christianity as harsh and hateful, especially concerning same-sex sexuality, transgenderism, and abortion, Nancy Piercy makes the compelling case that Christianity sustains the dignity of the body and accords with science and biology. Don't miss Love Thy Body, answering hard questions about life and sexuality. To receive your hardcover copy of Love Thy Body, as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. We'll return to the Bible Answer Man broadcast right after this. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. The Christian Research Journal's primary commitment is to contend earnestly for the faith that was once for all delivered to the saints. In keeping with this commitment, the journal's mission is both evangelistic and pastoral, furthering the proclamation and defense of the historic gospel of Jesus Christ, and helping his followers distinguish between essential Christian doctrine and doctrine that is peripheral, aberrant, or heretical. In an age of subjectivism and moral relativism, may Christians ground their faith and values in the objective, reliable testimony of Holy Scripture. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today. Call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. Of Nancy Piercy's recent book, Love Thy Body, Answering Hard Questions About Life and Sexuality, Professor Robert P. George of Princeton University says, liberal secularist ideology rests on a mistake, and Nancy Piercy puts her finger right on it. In embracing abortion, euthanasia, homosexual conduct and relationships, transgenderism and the like, liberal secularism is philosophically as well as theologically untenable. Piercy is precisely clear about what makes humans valuable. Don't just read, master Love Thy Body. To receive your hardcover copy as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-transforming outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Supporting the work of the Christian Research Institute is now as easy as sending a text message. Here's how you can help by texting your gift directly to CRI. To make a one-time gift to help equip fellow believers through the ongoing work of CRI, text TRUTH in all capital letters to 41444. That's TRUTH to 41444. To become a CRI support team member and make a difference on a regular basis, text STANDING in all capital letters to 91999. Again, that is STANDING to 91999. We do what we do here at CRI because life and truth matter.
And all of our outreaches are made possible by people like you standing shoulder to shoulder with us to make a difference for now and for eternity. God bless you.
Trans activists detach gender from biological sex. Kids down to kindergarten are being taught their bodies are irrelevant. Is this affirming or does it demean the body? Find out in Nancy Piercy's new book, Love Thy Body, answering hard questions about life and sexuality. To receive your hardcover copy of Love Thy Body as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's many outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. And now let's rejoin your host, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you much, Randy. The number to dial to get your questions answered on today's edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast, 888-ASK-HANK, numerically 888-275-4265. Back to the phone lines. We'll talk to Jim in Monterey, California. Hi, Jim.
Good to talk to you, Hank.
Nice to talk to you. You live in a beautiful part of the world.
Yes. It's been several years since I had the privilege of seeing you in person at a rally in Sacramento.
Uh-huh.
And I love your Apocalypse Code book.
Oh, thank you.
And I'm, interestingly, a fourth generation Messianic Jew. And I'm very troubled by the dispensationalists and the Zionists because, as I understand it, Yeshua HaMashiach, Jesus the Messiah, is the final sacrifice for sin. And now, I'm on the mailing list for David Jeremiah Turning Point. I've discovered that in February, he's going back to his Escape the Coming Night series on Revelation, which is, you know, right out of Darbyism and dispensationalism. And I was wondering if you have any plans to do something to counter that, or maybe even possibly debate Dr. Jeremiah.
Well, let me say, first of all, that I appreciate David Jeremiah very much as a person. He was one of the first people to call me when I was diagnosed with cancer. He himself is a cancer survivor, and he's been greatly encouraging to me. And so I have a tremendous amount of love and respect for him. He's the absolute real deal. When it comes to his views on Zionism and dispensationalism, I obviously very strongly disagree. And I've written about that in my book, The Apocalypse Code, as you just noted. Our perspectives differ, but I think these are the kinds of things that you bring up the word debate, that we can debate vigorously, we don't have to divide over. I do think, though, that your passion with respect to this particular issue is well-founded. It has tremendous implications in the present life, and I think, therefore, we shouldn't shy away from debating these issues. Do I have plans to debate David Jeremiah on this point? I don't. I would certainly be open to having a collegial conversation with him on this point, as I would with others that hold to the same paradigm that he holds to. And again, I felt strongly enough about this after I had done sufficient study on the book of Revelation to write a book on the subject, and that is really kind of where I'd like to leave it. Whenever the questions come up, I deal with the questions regarding Zionism and dispensationalism forthrightly, but always with the collegial spirit in mind. I think one of the great issues of our day is the schisms within the Christian church. And I look forward to a healing of those schisms as an answer to Christ's high priestly prayer in John 17, that we all might be as one. And this is not being Pollyannish. This is not being, trifling about very significant matters. Significant matters are still significant matters, but we have to realize that we are united around the essentials of the historic Christian faith. And therefore, when we speak about one another and speak to one another, we ought to do that with a great amount of love. I just got back from Athens a few hours ago, and I'm amazed at where the cultures are, particularly in Europe. I'm amazed as I stand at the Acropolis or the Parthenon and see how paper, tissue-thin civilization is, and how the only answer to the problems of civilization is Christianity. And so in that vein, I see that God has his people everywhere, and I want to make sure that I don't marginalize those people by not being collegial. Standing with a person like David Jeremiah shoulder to shoulder in the battle for life and truth, while I might deeply disagree with his Zionist perspective and with his dispensational perspective.
Yeah. Because what I'm thinking, my concern is that with the rapture concept and so forth, people thinking that, well, they can get saved, if they get left behind, but when Jesus comes, that's going to be it. That's going to be the final judgment, and there's not going to be any second chance for people.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I don't think there's any question about that. And Jesus was clear in John 5, where he said, "Do not be amazed at this. The time is coming when all from the graves will come out. Some will rise to live, and some will rise to be eternally condemned." When Jesus returns, there's not going to be a second chance. There's not going to be a semi-golden age. There's not going to be a rebuilt temple with reinstituted temple sacrifices, sacrifices that are efficacious for ceremonial uncleanness. When Jesus Christ comes, he will usher in the eternal state. And that's what Revelation 21 so beautifully communicates. God himself will be with us. We will be his people. He will be our God. He'll wipe every tear from our eyes. There'll be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away. Behold, all things have become new. So yes, I believe very passionately what you have just communicated. But nonetheless, I believe with all my heart that a person like David Jeremiah stands for the essentials of the Christian faith, and that he is my dear brother.
Uh-huh. But the thing is that what I'm concerned about is that people need to know that if they don't know Jesus Christ, they need to repent and come to him now, not tomorrow, the next day.
Well, and I think that's a message that would resonate. I can't speak for David Jeremiah in all aspects, but I think it'd certainly be a message that would resonate with him as well.
Well, thank you so very, very much for your wonderful ministry there with the Bible Answer Man. I'm just so sorry that at the present time you're not on the air here in Central Coast, California.
Well, we had many wonderful years of being on the air at Monterey, and appreciate that opportunity. And now we have a lot of other ways of reaching people in your area through the internet, through satellite radio, XM 131, something that people listen to, Sirius XM 131, and in many other forums now with our digital media platforms. So, yeah, it was a wonderful time being on the radio there in that format on those stations, but we are grateful to be able to have the same reach and even a greater reach today than we had before because of digital media technology. But thanks, Jim. Appreciate your passion and appreciate your call. Back to the phone lines. We'll talk to Cody, listening in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, CHRB. Cody, hi.
Hello. How are you, Hank?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Ah, very good, very good. Just on the way home, and my wife's driving, so I could call you up. So,
thank you.
Yeah. I just have a question. It's basically based upon, you know, how every there's many writings of the Bible. They all have slightly different word usage and stuff like that. But one that I actually refuse to get is a Bible that says, "Thou shall not kill" in the Ten Commandments, opposed to murder. Because "thou shalt not kill" would make basically, as I see it, would undermine what God says to David, because he was never reprimanded for all those battles he did. It was, you know, for what he did to with Bathsheba and then her husband and then of course with flooding the world and then Sodom and Gomorrah. You know, he killed people, and that murder is wrong. And I've had a lot of people, or not a lot of people, but some people argue against me, saying, well, God is about love and you shall not kill. And it's like, well, what about people in the military or police that are just defending you or me or families, their families, and they're forced to kill? By saying thou shall not kill, you're making them essentially sinners. It's thou shall not murder. And I just kind of want to hear what you have to say upon this, because to me it's quite obvious that those two words are very different, murder and kill.
Yeah, I don't know.
That would also include hunting. I'm a hunter.
Yeah.
I hunt for the higher quality of meat.
Yeah. Well, I don't think anybody could say it any better than you just said it. There's a difference between unjustified and justified homicide. Murder is unjustified homicide, and therefore murder is always wrong. But as you've correctly pointed out, not every instant of killing is murder. Capital punishment and self-defense occasion justified homicide. So the distinction that you're making is a distinction that is substantive. It's not a distinction without a difference. It is a distinction with a substantive difference. And to the extent that we blur the meaning between the two words, we make a grievous error.
Yeah. And that's just it, though, because actually the most aggressive conversation I had was this past weekend. It was actually me and a good friend of mine who agree upon this, because, you know, the first Christian army, I watched in a documentary, the first Christian army was built to repel the invading army coming from Spain into France to enforce Islam. And, you know, you can go on and on and on, but it's just, you know, I also notice that people, they'll say, oh, well, the Old Testament doesn't matter no more. And it's like, but it does. Like, the covenant was fulfilled, but the law still stands, because even Jesus says, I think it was Jesus in Matthew 5, chapter 5, verse 17, 18, he didn't come to abolish law. He fulfilled the law and started a new covenant, but the law still stands. And some people are taking, you know, they take it out of context, like, oh, you shouldn't kill. It's all about love. But, you know, God killed people out of love so others can flourish. I punish my child, you know, don't spare the rod, spoil the child, because I love my children.
Yeah, and, I think, know, one of the distinctions you do want to make, sorry I'm cutting you off here, but the reason I'm doing that is we're almost up to a station break. I think there are distinctions that you have to make when you use words. So when you say, I believe in the old covenant laws, there's a sense in which you can say that and a sense in which you cannot say that. For example, the civil and ceremonial aspects of the Old Testament covenant or Old Testament law have been fulfilled in Jesus Christ, and therefore we don't have to follow, let's say, dietary laws in the same way that the Old Testament people did. They have been fulfilled in Christ. However, there are aspects of the law, Ten Commandments, for example, that are efficacious for us in every sense. So law is not always law. You have to define what kind of law that you're talking about. Not all law is similar. We are coming up to station break. We'll be back on the other side of the break with more answers to your questions right here on the Bible Answer Man broadcast. And the quote of the day by Nancy Piercy. We'll be right back.
Advocates for same-sex sexuality disconnect sexuality from biological identity. Is this liberating, or does it denigrate biology? Discover the truth in Nancy Piercy's recent book, Love Thy Body, answering hard questions about life and sexuality.
To receive your copy of Love Thy Body as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-transforming outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit equip.org. Don't go anywhere. We're coming right back with more answers from the Bible Answer Man. Supporting the work of the Christian Research Institute is now as easy as sending a text message. Here's how you can help by texting your gift directly to CRI. To make a one-time gift to help equip fellow believers through the ongoing work of CRI, text TRUTH in all capital letters to 41444. That's TRUTH to 41444. To become a CRI support team member and make a difference on a regular basis, text STANDING in all capital letters to 91999. Again, that is STANDING to 91999. We do what we do here at CRI because life and truth matter. And all of our outreaches are made possible by people like you standing shoulder to shoulder with us to make a difference for now and for eternity. God bless you. Of Nancy Piercy's recent book, Love Thy Body, Answering Hard Questions About Life and Sexuality, Professor Robert P. George of Princeton University says, liberal secularist ideology rests on a mistake, and Nancy Piercy puts her finger right on it. In embracing abortion, euthanasia, homosexual conduct and relationships, transgenderism and the like, liberal secularism is philosophically as well as theologically untenable. Piercy is precisely clear about what makes humans valuable. Don't just read, master Love Thy Body. To receive your hardcover copy as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI. And make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-transforming outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. The Christian Research Journal's primary commitment is to contend earnestly for the faith that was once for all delivered to the saints. In keeping with this commitment, the journal's mission is both evangelistic and pastoral, furthering the proclamation and defense of the historic gospel of Jesus Christ, and helping his followers distinguish between essential Christian doctrine and doctrine that is peripheral, aberrant, or heretical. In an age of subjectivism and moral relativism, may Christians ground their faith and values in the objective, reliable testimony of Holy Scripture. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today. Call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. Supporters of abortion rights deny the fetus is a person, though she or he is biologically human. Is this equality for women, or does it threaten the intrinsic value of all humans? Be sure to read Nancy Piercy's new book, Love Thy Body, Answering Hard Questions About Life and Sexuality. To receive your hardcover copy of Love Thy Body as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit equip.org. Here once again is Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy. The quote of the day does come from Nancy Piercy from her book, Love Thy Body, and I think this is a pithy way of communicating, in other words, what Randy just mentioned. Nancy Piercy says this, to protect women's rights, we must be able to say what a woman is. If postmodernism is correct, that the body itself is a social construct, then it becomes impossible to argue for rights based on the sheer fact of being female. Why? Well, we cannot legally protect a category of people if we cannot identify that category. That says it all in just a few words, and it is another example of the brilliance that is encapsulated in the book by Nancy Piercy, Love Thy Body, the book available for those who support the ministry. You can check it out on the web at equip.org. Write me at Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. Or, of course, talk to our resource consultants, 888-7000, and the letters CRI. Back to the phone lines. We'll talk next to Mark in Tucson, Arizona, listening on Sirius XM 131.
Hi, Hank. It's Tucson.
Actually. Tucson, yeah. It's misspelled on the board, and I fell for it.
You did.
Yeah, I've been there. I love it. It's a beautiful place.
I've heard you talk a lot about, and you've kind of nibbled around the edges a lot about Israel, and if I'm misunderstanding, just correct me, but that they're not essentially God's people, and the promises that God made to them, does it really apply to them as a nation, and so on and so forth. So I'd just like you to clarify that, because, I mean, I think you have to be kind of blind not to see a lot of the prophecies and things being fulfilled right in front of our eyes with Israel as a nation.
Well, maybe, maybe not. I mean, and this is not something I've nibbled around the edges on. I've written a whole book about this. It was mentioned earlier in the broadcast, The Apocalypse Code, find out what the Bible really says about the end times and how it, why it matters today. In fact, I did a talk for rabbis and Christian leaders and even Muslims in the West Bank about a year and a half ago on this very subject. I was talking about the fault lines that run through Christian Zionism. And I think one of the major fault lines is the idea that God has two distinct people with two distinct plans, necessitating two distinct phases of the second coming, a secret coming followed by a second coming 7 years later. I think this is a big problem, because if you read the Old Testament, the first thing that, if you're not blind to the words, that you are struck with is that God has always had one people. And that one people, true Israel, is made up of many, many different genealogies. In other words, if you look, for example, at Esther, you read in Esther that Esther is raised up to save the Jews from certain destruction under Haman. And at that time, many different people from many different nations became Jews. They're looking on and seeing God's sovereign work through Esther, and it so impacts them, they become Jews. Now, how do they do that? They don't do that by changing their birth mother. They do that because they believe in Yahweh, the God of Israel, and they're brought into all the types and shadows pointing forward to Jesus Christ. You think back to the Exodus. At the time of the Exodus, a great multitude leaves Pharaoh's domain. That great mixed multitude is not just Jews. It is also those who no longer believe in the gods of Egypt, but follow the one true God. You think of Rahab. She is a Canaanite. She's in the lineage of Jesus Christ. Or Ruth, a Moabite, the arch enemy of Israel, in the lineage of Jesus Christ. All of this collectively pointing out a salient truth. God has always had one chosen people, and that chosen people is connected by the cross. So you see that chosen people not only in the Old Testament, made up of tribes and tongues and peoples, but you see that in the New Testament, particularly in the epic story of Peter getting a vision in which he sees clean and unclean food, and then he's told, don't call unclean what God has called clean. Now, the reason that vision was given to Peter is he didn't want to go see Cornelius. And he thought Jesus was some kind of a parochial Jewish Messiah until he got the vision. And then when he was explaining what happened to Cornelius, he said, now I understand that God does not show favoritism. Now, further, you look at the writings of the Apostle Paul. And the Apostle Paul makes a point, that point being that Abraham only had one seed, and that seed is Jesus Christ. And if you are in Christ, you become the seed of Abraham and an heir according to the promise. And it doesn't matter whether you're Jew or Greek. It doesn't matter whether you're male or female. It doesn't matter what station in life you have. If you are in Christ, you are the seed of Abraham and an heir according to the promise. So I think what we have to see is the fault line running through Zionism, the idea that God somehow or other makes a distinction between people based on race as opposed to relationship. Oh, lost our caller. Sometimes a cogent answer to a question does that. Let's go back to the phone lines. We'll talk to Cisco listening in Houston, Texas, Sirius XM 131. Hi, Cisco.
How you doing, Hank?
I'm doing well, thank you.
I don't know if you remember, I called about a month ago, and I was asking you, where did Satan go when he fell from heaven? And he was cast down from heaven?
Yeah.
And you had told me that he was in a space and time, and I understand all that. But my kind of question, I'm doing a little more thorough study in it myself. In Job 38, God asks Job, where were you when I laid the foundations on the earth? And if you go down to verse 7, chapter 38, verse 7, it says the sons of God, referring to angels, shouted with joy for the creation of the earth. And my question was, the sons of God, meaning it says all the sons of God, all the angels, is Lucifer included in that passage of being the sum of all?
Well, I think in answering that question, there's a couple of things. All does not have to be thought of in the sense of including Satan. You know, if you have every creature under heaven praising the Lord, I mean, that's contextualized, and so we don't think that that means crickets and mice. You have to think about this in terms of categories. Those who worship God are in a different category from those who do not worship God. The other thing that's important is that when you look at terms like morning star, again, you have to recognize that those terms are not univocal, they're equivocal. Depends on the context in which that phrase is used. So we certainly see this in the book of Job, that morning star can refer to Satan, but it can also refer to Jesus. It can also refer to the followers of Jesus, but context lets us know what is being referred to there.
Okay, because I was also kind of curious, like how I was asking last time I called, when did Satan fall, before or after the seventh-day creation? Because I was thinking if he was included in this, in verse 7, I believe it is, of 38, Job 38, verse 7, then he would have fell after the seventh-day creation. And to me, that would have followed sequence of what you said, him being in space and time and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
You know what I'm trying to ask?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, and but the answer quite properly is always that Satan fell before the fall of Adam and Eve, not after the fall of Adam and Eve. Reason we know that is that he was already the deceiving one at the time that Adam and Eve were deceived. So he was already a tempter, a deceiver, one who had fallen.
Okay. Because I've been doing a little deeper study in this, and I was thinking maybe he fell sometime during verse 1 or 2 in Genesis, you know, when earth was void and without form.
Well, he rebelled against God prior to the time that Adam and Eve fell, because he became the tempter for their fall. Let's go back to the phone lines and talk to Ryan. He's listening in Alberta, Canada, Sirius XM 131. Hi, Ryan.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, thank you.
That's good. I just had a quick question about Sheldon, who called there earlier. He was talking about the kissing the statues and stuff like that and praying to them. So I just had a question about, like, on Exodus 2:20 or 22, it says, "You shall not make yourself carved image, any likeness of anything that is in heaven above or that is in the earth beneath." So with kissing a statue or praying to it, even though that's a word or a form of veneration, isn't that also a form of idolatry? Because aren't we supposed to emulate nobody other than Jesus Christ himself?
Well, look, if in fact that is the case, if venerating an icon is bad, then God himself has been involved in idolatry because Christ came in human flesh. He is the icon of God. And if, in fact, idolatry is carving an image, then God himself would have been responsible for the idolatry that took place when they carved icons or images on the Ark of the Covenant. So icons and images or graven images are not sinful. What is sinful is to fall down and worship graven images. And that's the distinction I was making when I was talking to Sheldon. We are never to worship graven images. We are never to make anything an idol and place that idol above our worship of God. A worship is for God alone. There is only one that we worship. But venerating someone or wanting to emulate someone who worships God is a good thing. They become exemplars for us. They become those like the apostles that we say, I want to be like those apostles, where Christ becomes the pattern, the tapestry for my life, as it was the pattern and the tapestry for their lives. I'm going to have to leave it at that, Ryan, but there's a big difference between idolatry or making a graven image to bow down and worship that graven image, and making an image as an icon that points us to God in a positive sense. And that distinction should never be misunderstood, because the moment you misunderstand that, you would misunderstand God's purposes and even causing icons or images to be carved into the Ark of the Covenant. Out of time.
Thank you for joining us today. Our mission at the Christian Research Institute is to equip Christians to think and to live Christianly. In Love Thy Body, Nancy Piercy goes beyond politically correct slogans with a riveting expose of the dehumanizing worldview behind same-sex sexuality, transgenderism, abortion, euthanasia, and other watershed moral issues. In appreciation for your gift to help strengthen and expand the life-changing outreaches of CRI, Hank Hanegraaff would like to send you the book Love Thy Body, Answering Hard Questions About Life and Sexuality. Simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. You can also write CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter. Supporting the work of the Christian Research Institute is now as easy as sending a text message. Here's how you can help by texting your gift directly to CRI. To make a one-time gift to help equip fellow believers through the ongoing work of CRI, text TRUTH in all capital letters to 41444. That's TRUTH to 41444. To become a CRI support team member and make a difference on a regular basis, text STANDING in all capital letters to 91999. Again, that is STANDING to 91999. We do what we do here at CRI because life and truth matter. And all of our outreaches are made possible by people like you standing shoulder to shoulder with us to make a difference for now and for eternity. God bless you. Of Nancy Piercy's recent book, Love Thy Body, Answering Hard Questions About Life and Sexuality, Professor Robert P. George of Princeton University says, liberal secularist ideology rests on a mistake, and Nancy Piercy puts her finger right on it.
In embracing abortion, euthanasia, homosexual conduct and relationships, transgenderism and the like, liberal secularism is philosophically as well as theologically untenable. Piercy is precisely clear about what makes humans valuable. Don't just read, master, love thy body. To receive your hardcover copy as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-transforming outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org.